Good evening. Thanks for coming the night before the election. Perhaps perfectly, I thought tonight we'd continue our discussion of the hindrances and talk about tonight restlessness and worry. And I know in my life I've certainly had a lot of both recently because of worldly events and my worry about them. So it'd be nice to take a little bit of a look at where these things come from and what we might do with them, both in our practice and in our lives. Because as I've said, as I've been going through this series of talks on the hindrances, which are things which prevent us in our meditation practice from maintaining mindfulness, I don't really see a boundary between our meditation practice and our daily lives. And what we use in one certainly can be ported over the other to live more happily and more skillfully. So the hindrances are presented in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the core teachings of the Buddha. And they're presented there as mental objects. They're essentially part of the class of the sixth of the five senses. So they're the five senses and then plus thoughts or mental objects. And the hindrances are considered to be mental objects. If we think about restlessness, just kind of for a moment, if you think of that word, there's a certain feeling tone that goes with it. Certain energy or anxiety that you feel when you say that word. But if you think about what the word actually is, it's just the nature-ness of not having rest. Or thinking about it in the Buddhist context, not resting in the present moment. I know when I kind of think of that, I kind of let out a little sigh and I think, oh yes, resting in the present moment, how delightful. The Pali word of restlessness is actually, one of its translations, is the quality of shaking above the object of meditation. So there's this kind of sense of the mind quavering and being uncomfortable while down below the meditation object is there in its cradle and we're kind of absent that resting in the cradle of the present moment. The good news is if you experience it a lot, you're in great company. Because the only way to get rid of restlessness is to achieve enlightenment. Restlessness and the hindrances is also often paired with worry. They're really both of the same nature or quality. Worry also is only abandoned at the point of enlightenment. So whether you're looking around the room, we're all restless, you're perfectly welcome to beat yourself up about being restless and having a bad meditation sitting, but everyone else is doing it too, so you're really not too special in that regard. Which is, I think, a great reminder. One of the factors in sustaining mindfulness, especially when it comes to restlessness, is there being a balance between the quality of energy, bringing energy to sustain that mindfulness, and the quality of concentration. If you think of the cradle image, cradles have walls. And the concentration is like the wall of the cradle that holds the present moment so that we can rest in it comfortably without having so much energy that we kind of explode its boundaries. That's what mindfulness is being able to maintain that balance. If any of you have dealt with bipolar disorder or with spending time with or being a hyperactive child, you know that when lots of energy arises, I believe the Pali word for that is called virya, when lots of energy arises, it just bursts forth. We can't control our thoughts, we find it hard to stay on one thing, and we're just looking for the next thing. And sometimes it can be fabulous when compared to the consequences of depression. But also, it's very difficult to sustain a restful, as opposed to restless, a restful ease in the present moment when there isn't a balance between energy and concentration. It's also good to remember that when we do a practice, often I know when I try to sustain my meditation practice, I get a little caught up in the extreme example of something happening to me. I can be a little bit of a drama queen, so I often go to extreme examples also. But when we're looking at these hindrances, it's quite useful also not just to dwell in the extreme examples, but also to look for the subtle manifestations. because A, they're true in all of us in our daily life and in our meditation practice, and B, doing so hones the skill of recognizing these hindrances. And when you are able to recognize them in their subtle expression, often you can stop them from advancing to a more severe expression, and the quality of your mindfulness or your meditation will be a little better, and then, of course, at the end, you're not scolding yourself for being a bad little meditator, and that's a lot more comfortable. Mary Grace Orr, who's one of the teachers on the Spirit Life Teachers Council, gave me a lovely teaching at one point that she was experiencing some state. I actually don't even remember what it was at the moment. She was experiencing some state, and she just imagined her entire body being filled with this state. And this is perhaps why it comes to memory when I think of restlessness, because often that sense of wanting to catapult ourselves out of our skin is one of the most familiar experiences of restlessness. She said one of the things she tries to do is just find one teensy little place in the body where that expression isn't true, or where that feeling isn't true. And often, if it's not a toe or, you know, an eyelid or something, and those are usually great places to find those things, often in the quality, in the ability, in the consciousness that is perceiving whatever it is you're experiencing, the thing that is able to look is often a great place to look for the lack of the thing that is being looked at. So even if you can find one little place when restlessness arises or when worry arises that is not experiencing that, it will kind of allow you to perceive that balance is possible, that this isn't all one thing that you're experiencing. And often, upon seeing that one little place in your body or in your consciousness that this hindrance is not occurring, often that place will grow and the hindrance will shrink in size and in its sense of agitation that you experience. So how do restlessness and worry arise? Well, we may find that they're especially present in our lives these days, because traditionally it's taught that the way especially restlessness arises is that we pay too much attention to the content of our thoughts. That, you know, they're actually not very important. Or that we pay too much attention to the affairs of the world, and we get all caught up in them. So I certainly notice, regarding the affairs of the world recently, that the presidential election is really preoccupying my attention, and I'm very caught up in it. And I really can get carried away reading the morning paper or watching the news about what's happening and really lose touch with what's going on in the present moment, just roiling in my mind about it. And for me, recently, I've noticed that when it comes to worry, as I said, which is often paired with restlessness, Prop 8 is really, oh my goodness, I'm very worried about it. It comes up for me again and again. I've done uncharacteristic actions. You know, I've given more money than maybe is prudent, certainly more money than I'm accustomed to. I haven't done it out of a sense of ease and generosity. You know, I've done it out of a place of fear and worry. This colors my mind state. It colors my day-to-day existence, and it certainly colors my meditation. And as I said, I don't see a difference between those two things. Both of these, all of these, the worry, the paying attention to thoughts, the content of thoughts, and paying attention to the affairs of the world, are of course preconditioned on the experience of a very strong sense of self. Because all of those things have an I at the center of them, an I that is placed in opposition to the way the world is, or the way the world should be, in my mind, thus the worry that the world might not end up that way. So there's a way in which the arising of restlessness and the arising of worry is really egotistical, it's vanity. I listened to a Joseph Goldstein talk, he had some great quote from St. John of the Cross about the arising of these hindrances, we're all vanity and always vanity. And it was interesting, and I didn't write it down, so didn't bring it to you today, but Joseph Goldstein gives a great talk on restlessness and worry, which you might want to look up. Remember that restlessness and worry are mental objects. Often we think of restlessness as being a physical sensation. So the sense of wanting to crawl out of one's skin, or kind of a nervous energy that we perceive in the body. But what is actually going on is the preoccupation with the sensation. That is actually the mental object of restlessness. If we were actually in mindfulness, we would just be noting, oh, tingling, tingling, and there really wouldn't be much to it. We'd notice the arising of tingling, we'd notice the passing away of tingling, but then all of a sudden things start racing about the tingling. There isn't anything but the tingling. The tingling is a problem. That is actually the mental object of restlessness. It's a quality of the mind that can be scanned for, can be seen, once you see it, you can look for another place in the mind or in the body as an effective tool, as a skillful means, to find a place that isn't restless, and then there grows a sense of ease that is possible even amidst the experience of the mental object of restlessness or of worry. One of the chief ways that worry arises, one of the great preconditions, is remembering past unskillful acts. So being worried about how someone thinks of you, or being worried about just kind of feeling badly about what you did to someone at some point when you were in a more unskillful time in your life. Now, Buddhism talks a lot about uprooting these things. But I haven't found a place yet where Buddhism says, go back into your past and make right what you've done wrong. There's a lot of emphasis on sila, or moral living. And it's great stuff. Living right is fabulous because it doesn't bring up situations that cause worry and restlessness and people coming after you and want to throw stones at you, etc., that you always have to worry about if you act rightly in the world. So one of the things that I have experienced with, and also that I have noted that works very well, if worry is a thing for you, is actually to go into the 12-step spiritual tradition, which is, as you may know, one of America's largest spiritual traditions, and look at the 8th and the 9th step work in that tradition. And the 8th step is about making a list of things you've done wrong to other people. And the 9th step is going back to those people and apologizing for it. And it is a very interesting process to do. And if you're prone to worry, it is one of the great ways to relieve yourself of the guilt and anxiety that can come from concentrating on unskillful past acts. And a personal testament to the fact that it really works. And it really enables one to be in the present moment here more often. When the antidote, you know, for the last couple of weeks I've been passing out charts about the hindrances and the antidotes, and I forgot to today, but we can let that go. The antidote to the hindrance of restlessness or worry is concentration. And you know, when you hear that, you just kind of go, oh, geez, you know, I'm kind of stuck in suffering, and you expect me to work harder to relieve myself of suffering, and that seems to bring a feeling of just more suffering to the whole equation. Yet there are different ways you can hold this sense of concentration. You can simply replace the word mindfulness with concentration. I'm just going to be more mindful. And what is being more mindful? Being more mindful is just being aware of the true nature of things. And that means that this mental object, this worry or this restlessness, isn't me. It's not mine. It's not I. It's impersonal. It is impermanent. It is going to come and go, and there's not a me here that is making it happen. So if you're able to do that, that is concentration. That simply increasing mindfulness is concentration. So there's a way in which you might just kind of be able to go, oh, instead of bearing down harder, as we often imagine concentration to mean. Joseph Goldstein makes that, again, I listened to a great talk of his, makes that link very skillfully. And he, one of the things that he notes, which I think is a great little tool, is he says, why don't you note the presence of restlessness in the Pali language? Then you think, oh, gee, I haven't learned those words. Pick any language, it doesn't matter. He notes that identifying, noting the sense of restlessness or the sense of worry in another language depersonalizes it. You know, when we think the word restlessness, we immediately attach a sensation to it. We immediately attach a sense of I to it. And yet, if you think, what is it? Oh, udacha. In the Pali language, that ain't going to do that for you. Or, you know, go to Google and pick the translation tool and look for another word that kind of has the sound of restlessness in your mind, and that might make it easier to remember. And just note it in another language, because it'll help you with concentration, which is concentrating more on the way things are, which is mindfulness, which is knowing that it's not you, and then it'll pass. And when you're able to remember that, you're giving space to something other than the experience of restlessness going on in your mind. So there's another aspect of concentration which can be extraordinarily useful. Instead of just imagining that we need to bear down, concentration is often thought of as intense focus at a single point. Now, this can be a very useful tool. So let's say there's significant discomfort and restlessness and obsession with knee pain. I'm a big one for knee pain, because I have it. And there's a kind of disquiet or inability to rest in the present moment because I keep thinking about my knee pain. Now, this might be aversion. Maybe we could pick some other object that arises. It doesn't much matter at the point. But concentration as focus is extraordinarily useful in piercing the veil of that whatever that experience is, looking at it closely to try to discover its true nature. You can kind of decode or unhinge what your perceptions about that experience are by focusing quite intently on whatever experience is arising, the restlessness or is arising, the worry in you. But another way to think about concentration is to simply have a concerted view, a clear view on the very large scope of the arising of something. Now this a little goes back to the impersonal, etc., but one not need get there immediately. Often we need an interim thing to remind us, oh yeah, this is impersonal. So let's say you're obsessed about something and you go, okay, so you bear down on it, and bearing down on it doesn't seem to help at all. Back up, take a big view and go, I wonder if the other people in this room experience that, or all the people in this center, how many of them are experiencing this? And all of a sudden, the bigger view, again, it helps depersonalize. It helps you remember that it's impermanent. It helps you find a place in your consciousness where that restlessness doesn't exist, and therefore put into better frame or better scale the restlessness that does exist. And then all of a sudden, it's not everything. And all of a sudden, you can imagine being free from it. Okay, so it's 7:20. I'd like you to pick a person in the room that you don't know as well. Introduce yourselves. And I'd like you to talk for 7 minutes with each other about how restlessness and worry has manifested in your life and or in your practice. Totally okay not to talk about sitting meditation practice during this. I really want you all to see the same things that manifest on the cushion manifest in our daily lives, and that there's a link between those things. So just pick someone and start talking about restlessness and worry. And if some of you need to go into a group of three, that's great.
Great, thanks everyone.
Are there any things anyone wants to share for a minute or two about what they determined? Going once. Going twice. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
That's what you can do for a universal phenomenon.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, a universal phenomenon. Lots of those things are true in meditation practice. There aren't actually that many. Let's just say you can generally trust that there's going to be nothing new to humanity in the practice. So that actually can be quite helpful. A combination between restlessness and what is right action.
Or what we perceive to be the right thing to be doing at a particular time.
Ah, yes. Uh-huh. So whatever is distracting, you're generally distracting from a right action when experiencing restlessness? Is that what you mean?
No, it's more like you have a certain idea, preconceived notion that you've learned about what you're supposed to be doing in a particular situation.
Yeah.
And so when you're not doing that, you feel
anxiety. Yeah, indeed. And that goes back to that ego sense of there's this I that should be something. Yeah, which, you know, again, we've all got, so I guess I shouldn't be pointing it out like it's a problem.
Well, you just said, well, you know, we can vilify ourselves for something, and it's clearer to just know it.
Yeah.
And you pointed out earlier about the consciousness of it. And I
had
other teachers say that we, you know, like, shift back into the awareness of the restlessness or become curious about it, just like I do with the opposite of restlessness, sleepiness, falling asleep, or zoning out. One way is to simply note that it's happening, see, like, what does it feel like, it's outlined. And so if I sort of look at my restlessness while it's happening, like, not entangled in it, and that makes it a little more bearable, and then get curious about it. But I don't know, restlessness makes you, even more than sleepiness, makes you want to change the whole thing.
Even disdaining the restlessness or having a judgment about it is not being entangled in it. There's a way, like, even when you're kind of locked in that, you're on the road to recovery from it, because you're not just lost in the suffering and discomfort of it. So anyway, you can kind of get a little bit of objectivity, rest in the awareness about it, you're actually on the road. Thank you all for your time and attention this evening, and I hope you stay warm and dry, and that we all have a really great election day tomorrow. Max, thanks.